Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Could you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 1238?
Request of Linda McDowell to address Council regarding housing.
Ms. McDowell? All right, can you please read the title for Council Communications Item Number 1239?
Request of Dave Regan to address Council regarding homelessness.
Mr. Regan. All right. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications Item Number 1240?
Request of Leo Rhodes to address Council regarding encampment and homelessness.
Mr. Rhodes. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes, and that clock in front of you will help count it down.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for letting me speak this morning. Yeah, I've talked to you before about the homeless issues and how it's very difficult out there right now without any housing or anything like that, shelters right now. It's kind of funny that right now that they have a racial profiling, because that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. The police officers lately have been coming on up to me and asking me if I have any drugs or alcohol on me. Clearly, I've been clean and sober for going on nine years now. And when they come on up to me, I do not smell like alcohol at all. You know, I do not slur my words or anything. And yet they still tend to keep on asking me these questions. Is it because I'm a Native American? Is it because I'm homeless? You know, these are the questions that I ask you, the council, that you should ask the police. Is that the problem? The other thing is, like this sit and lie ordinance, I know that's not, it's unconstitutional. But, well, again, you know, with the homeless people, they have no place to go. And if you have no place to go, you know, you're going to be out there in the streets. You're going to be out in the open. I just ask you, please, to open up a shelter, or I know the RAC building is coming. But we need something too, quicker. We need more stuff like that, more stuff on the east side also. It's not just, you know, homeless people aren't just downtown. They're also on the other side. Services are great, but also that kind of takes away from when you have services, you have programs, and people go through them. I see them coming on out highly motivated, but they don't have no place to go. And they end up right back in the same spot where they're at before, which is the drugs and alcohol, because they have nothing else to do, nowhere else to go. So we need to put these homeless people someplace, and we need them, you know, to give them a stepping stone to get out of homelessness. Shelters right now and tent cities right now would be the best option, also the least the most cost efficient thing for us to do right now. The long-term goal, yeah, which is affordable housing, that's great, but you got to remember that takes years for that to happen. And also with the economy the way it's going, it's going to take less and less the more money we put in there. So I just want to say that, yeah, tent cities and shelters is where we need to go right now. So please, you know, help the homeless people get on off the streets.
Congratulations on your sobriety.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Rhodes. Carla, can you please read the item, the title for Council Calendar, Communications Item 1241?
Request of Barry Joe Stoll to address Council regarding Police Bureau actions causing him to need HAP subsidized housing.
Good morning, Mr. Stoll. Welcome back. Glad you're here. I think you know the procedures.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Good morning. On September 1st, 2003, I had an encounter with the Portland police, and I said to the officer that I was protected under the Medical Marijuana Act and I would beat it in court. I did and I didn't. What happened was I was denied defenses under a case called State versus Owenby, and that case was found to be have made obsolete by the very Oregon Medical Marijuana Act that the OMB case was used to deny my defenses under. So we had this kind of circular thing where obsolete case law was used. Council knows that Portland police officer Jason Serry cost the city of Portland $350,000 for his shooting of the unarmed black motorist James Jahar Perez. That happened about the time the district attorney found out I was protected under the Medical Marijuana Act, and my neurologist, Dr. Robert Grimm, had operated a brain research laboratory and was testifying on my behalf regarding my protection under the Medical Marijuana Act that, frankly, I don't believe the district attorney was aware of until I taught them. So to say that the police officers on the beat should have been aware of what the district attorney wasn't aware of is a little bit of a stretch. But anyhow, what happened with that case was I was drawn into a 30-day no-cause eviction by my nonprofit affordable housing landlord. I appealed that case. As I was appealing the case, I came home from my day job. I'm a musician, so I learned at music school, don't quit your day job, from the teachers there that were working as teachers, of course, all better musicians than the students. So I'm a realist about how we support arts in our community. So my day job, I came home and I couldn't get into my apartment. I'd been locked out by the Multnomah County Sheriff and the landlord. The Court of Appeals ruled that was in violation of a stay pending appeals. And the day the court order came out, the landlord and the sheriff entered my apartment to destroy $15,000 worth of my goods inside that apartment. I'd been locked out, as I said, in violation of the stay. I brought procedures against the landlord. It turns out it wasn't even legal for them to file the 30-day no-cause eviction case. And the case that defines the moment of filing a case in Oregon is my Supreme Court case that I filed from my 1989 pot bus sentence. I started that research in the law library. So I've been in a little cat and mouse game with the Portland police. My nonprofit that I'm supposed to be doing is the Cannabis Research Institute. We now have industrial hemp legal in Oregon. This shows you what that plant can grow like, and it's not good for this environment. It actually should be grown in probably Nebraska. Ken Kesey says, we are now at a time when we can approach politicians with an argument for legalizing marijuana that they have a tough time squirming out from under. That was May 1982. I think it's time for us to move on these issues.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item 1242?
Request of Marco Lampson to address Council regarding the August 28th Youth Assembly on Violence.
Mr. Lampson. Mr. Lampson. All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for the 9:30 time certain council calendar item 1243?
Accept the report on the plan to address racial profiling.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm pleased today to have this opportunity for the chief to present her racial profiling plan that has been developed by her staff and with public input starting in January and actually being updated at various points in between with community meetings. The Human Rights Commission was also very helpful in the development of this plan. And we're going to go over the details of this plan, but like anything, it's a plan. And the reality is that, you know, racial profiling, racial bias are things that we're going to work hard to eliminate, but honestly, I don't think we're going to eliminate those in my lifetime. But we need to continue to work hard to do that. It's going to take... One of the things that I'm most committed to is working with the chief, is making our police force look more like the community it serves. A more diverse police force, I think, will go a long ways towards reducing both the reality and the perceptions of racial bias and racial profiling. And we have made tremendous gains in our hiring. We are hiring almost up to full strength now. But the objectives of a force that reflects the community is still a goal that we have not achieved yet. But I think over the long term, when we achieve that goal, that will go a long way towards addressing these problems. It also takes officers who are well-trained. It takes the community to work with officers to understand and respect cultural differences. And I think many of the officers I see every day are working very hard at that. There have been things like the Living Room Conversation sponsored by the Latino Network, and I know that Oregon Outreach has done a number of listening sessions, and I think those have gone a long ways towards making our officers better officers, more respectful, and appreciative of cultural differences. So the chief will present the strategies here, and as I said, I don't think we're going to eliminate racial bias in my lifetime, but it's the goal we have is to reduce, to work with the chief's plan to really make sure that we can reduce the perception and the reality of racial profiling and racial bias. So I'd like to thank, before the chief gets started, I'd like to thank her head on. It's not an easy topic to talk about. It's probably not an easy topic for a chief of a police bureau to take on, and our chief has done that, and she deserves much credit for that. And we're going to hear the details, and I just want to once again commend the chief for being at the forefront of this issue and not, as many large bureaus and many cities do, just sort of let this issue coast. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Sizer.
Good morning. My name is Rosie Sizer. I'm the chief of police for Portland, Oregon, and I'm here to talk about the second issue in two huge issues we've been working on over the last several years. As you may recall, a couple months ago, I was here with Mary Beth Baptista to talk about the issue of force, and I'm here to talk to you about the issue of race. And there are no more difficult topics for police officers and police administrations to wrestle with than force and race. But there are no more important issues for us to address for a variety of reasons, including their effect upon the trust that the public holds in our services. I'm going to give you, rather than going in bureaucratic detail and reading the plan to you, I'm going to give you a little bit of history about the work that we have done, outline the program areas that we've been working on, and give you some updates about some of the strategies that are reaching some fruition at the time. And I'm also here with Hector Lopez because I'm sure you will be interested in hearing something about the Police Community Relations Subcommittee of the Human Rights Commission, which he chairs. And I'll turn it over to him when I get to that point in my remarks. First, I want to talk a little bit about my feelings around race. To some degree, this is deeply personal. It's very difficult for police officers because often what happens to police officers is race is something you wrestle with in highly charged situations. It is often hurled as an accusation as you are going about your job. And so it's an issue of great sensitivity both to police officers and to the wider community and communities of color. We hire from the American public, and the American public is not immune to racial bias. We are not immune to racial bias. I think it's important to acknowledge this. One of the things that I have often talked about to my officers is after a listening session, now almost 3 years ago, where I heard the stories of minority members of our community and their interaction and, in some cases, their fear of race, I was deeply touched. The next morning, I was on my way to work, driving down Vista Avenue, which is a wealthy area. And I observed along the parking strip a Hispanic man dressed as I am dressed usually on the weekend. And as I drove by, my immediate assumption was he was there to do someone's yard work. That was an assumption that was based on racial stereotyping. I'm not saying it was wrong, and I'm not saying I acted upon it in any way, but I think it's a clear case that we are all raised in this country with certain stereotypes around race and gender and economic class. And because the power that police officers hold over our community and that we are entrusted with, it's really important for us to do soul searching about our own biases and to really think about the impacts of our work on all communities, particularly communities of color that need us most. So a little bit about this topic and the Portland Police Bureau. We have been working on it to some degree or another since 1999, when the issue of racial profiling became a national topic of debate. We, along with other law enforcement agency leaders, passed a resolution strongly opposing race-based profiling and other discrimination in our work. In 2002, then-Chief Mark Croker convened a blue ribbon panel on racial profiling. And one of the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Panel was for the Portland Police Bureau to begin to collect data on traffic stops, which we did in 2001. In 2002, the Bureau adopted Directive 344.05, Prohibited Bias-Based Policing, which adopted the Department of Justice definition rather than an earlier definition that we had used that essentially said that racial profiling was the sole reliance upon race as the reason for a stop. We have become much more sophisticated and nuanced since that point. In 2003 to 2005, the Police Bureau took additional steps with met with community organizations on traffic stop issues and on race issues. We invited a national expert on stops data and collection to speak on the topic. Her name is Lori Friedel. We trained officers on cultural competency, conflict resolution, crisis intervention, and ethical decision making, and launched a new recruitment campaign. In 2008, Mayor Potter and Oregon Action convened 5 listening sessions. In 2007, with the help of the Racial Profiling Committee, we began to develop strategies to address the issue with community stakeholder input. And in 2008, the plan was discussed in community meetings facilitated by the Human Rights Commission. One of the things I do in the Racial Profiling Plan is make a business case for dealing with the issue. One, officers will be safer on the street. It's the right thing to do. It's less risky in terms of expensive litigation. Law enforcement can be more effective in its role if it addresses the issue, and it reflects the increasing diversity of our community. There are 4 topic areas that are contained in the plan, and under each topic are a variety of strategies, their due dates, and then how we intend to evaluate the success of those strategies. The first one, and this is what Dan Salzman mentioned, was create a police bureau that reflects the diversity of the community. Strategy 2, or topic area 2, is give officers concrete skills to help them on the street. So this addresses the issues of practice, policy, and training. 3 is to reach out to the community to build mutual understanding and trust. And 4, collect and analyze the right data on traffic stops. Our top priorities for 2009 have been to work with the Human Rights Commission and the Office of Human Relations to create opportunities for officers to engage with communities of color. We are also engaged in work to identify our best practitioners on the topic of searches. So those officers who have the greatest number of searches that are successful in recovering contraband weapons or drugs. And then to learn from those practitioners what makes them so successful and to migrate that knowledge out into the organization. Searches are often a point of conflict with communities of color, And so my hope is that we reduce the incidence of unsuccessful searches and therefore reduce the incidence that communities of color feel as though they're being unduly searched or picked on. We are also going to be inventorying our training and supervision on the issue of customer service, what I like to call professionalism and respect, and then to partner with other agencies to learn from them about what works in reducing racial profiling. And then we will update the plan and also provide written feedback about our progress. One of the things that we have done this year is partnered with Portland State University in getting from them their best recommendations about benchmarks for us to analyze the data and new data points for us to begin collecting. This is rather a complicated issue. It's rather a contentious issue. It's our feeling that census alone is not an adequate benchmark to our stop data. I think most researchers agree on that. The question is, what are better benchmarks? What can we do in addition to analyze the data in a more fruitful fashion? And then what data points are we not collecting that we should be collecting? And so in the next month or two, we hope to finalize the report from Portland State University on those points and also to commit to making some changes in our data collection. Just to kind of flag it, this whole issue is complicated by the fact we're migrating to a new CAD system. And currently, stop data is collected via the CAD. Under the new system, it won't be collected via the CAD system. It will be collected by a records management system that is also in the offing for the Portland Police Bureau. Additionally, we went through in-service training the first 6 months of this year. As you may know, every police officer in the city of Portland receives 40 hours of annual in-service. One of the blocks of instruction had to do with informing our personnel about the racial profiling plan, the principal strategies, and also talking intensively about that issue of respect and professionalism. And one of the key points in the conversations we've had is whether or not there is racial bias at play. Often minority members of our community feel when they are treated disrespectfully, it is because the officer is biased or it is racist. And so it's particularly incumbent upon us to be professional and respectful in our encounters with everyone in our community, and particularly community of colors. And that is done in light of the fact often police officers are themselves treated incredibly disrespectfully. So it takes a real act of will and significant training to reinforce this message over and over. Another of our achievements this year is we are reconditioning how we hire police officers, both in the hiring process and also new recruit training. We have begun a community partnership program. So when officers are first hired, we have been hiring them as civilians. We've been placing them with community partners. So they develop relationships at the street level with some of our most important partners. And in so doing, we can evaluate their ability to work with the community on a position of equality. They learn what resources are out there, and they begin the process of developing relationships with the community and our community partners that is an expectation for their whole career and that will serve them well. We started with our partners in the Police Activities League that often works with disadvantaged youth, and in the Sunshine Division that works with people who are experiencing poverty and unemployment. We have partnered with JDAI, which is the juvenile justice reform, and placing officers at the juvenile justice system and at SEI, and we plan to grow that program beyond the borders of those agencies. We are also intensively involved in the issue of gang activity. As you are aware, it has been the misfortune of this community to be experiencing rising rates of gang violence over the last year or two. And it's deeply concerning to all of you, to members of the community and the police bureau. And so we have moved from a more reactive investigative model to a more proactive model. But we have done that realizing it carries with it a risk of accusations of being racially profiling. So there is some risk to us in doing that. My feeling about this proactive work is it's a sorting process, and that the better that you know the community and you know community members, the more finely you can sort. So you look for people who you think are engaged in violent gang activity, and you give particular attention to them. It's not a perfect science, but I think simply reacting to gang shootings and arresting the perpetrators was not an aggressive enough tactic for us to take. In doing this gang work, we have partnered with gang outreach folks in a way that I think we haven't seen since the early 1990s. The city of Portland was awarded JAG stimulus money, and about half of
JAG,
Justice Assistant Grant. It's the new terminology for what used to be called block grants. We are given fairly wide discretion about how to spend that money. And about half of that money over the next 3 years is going to be devoted to gang outreach. So not the only intervention is a law enforcement intervention on the street that we can call on our partners in outreach to talk to potential troublemakers or problems spots and talk to people about the possible consequences of their activity. In addition to that, we are partnering with the Office of Youth Violence Prevention on making sure that we do referrals of kids that we think are at risk to the appropriate agencies. And that office is also tracking, are there the resources in the community to actually serve this these at-risk kids? One of the final things I'll talk about in the area of policy and practice has to do with my commitment to, when we make a traffic stop, giving the person we stop a business card and either a ticket or a warning for the offense that we stop them for. This strategy is not without some peril. I think there is some concern among the officers that if you're going to actually have to write the paperwork, they'll default to a ticket rather than a warning. We'll check to make sure that that's not happening. But it is to address the concern that we're stopping people for no good reason, or we're not telling them why they're stopping, or they don't know who we are. And it's important for me, for us to not be robots, that we are not nameless, faceless blue suits, but that are human beings, that we give our name and we provide the reason for the stop. And sometimes that will end in a ticket, and sometimes that will end in a warning, which does not affect one's driving record. We will implement those policies when we install in all the patrol cars printers so we can do these tickets and warnings electronically. And we are devoting some grant money to the technology and the software to make that happen. And then the final, and I think the most important area, is our willingness to extend ourselves to the community to meet the community in a variety of forums to really build a greater sense of trust and understanding. And we have with us great partners. And one of the great partner that we have is the Office of Human Relations and its director, Maria Lisa Johnson, who in her heart and in her work is a peace builder. One of the important things for us is because of historic distrust, we have people who can serve as conveners, can introduce us, can create a safe forum for these engagements to happen. And we have found that in the Office of Human Relations and in the Police Community Relations Subcommittee. I will let Hector Lopez talk about that work and how that committee has been formed, but we're committed to keeping that committee abreast, as well as you, of what we're doing, of partnering with them to develop the best practices and to move forward with good ideas and improve our relationship with minority communities. Hector.
Thank you, Chief. I'm Hector Lopez, Human Rights Commission. Commissioners, community, we're very pleased with the draft that you've just been presented with. It's a very promising and a very hopeful document addressing many of the issues that we've heard from community throughout these many years. Hopeful because I hope you caught the intentionality of the language used by the chief. We're talking about race. We're talking about racism within institutional reality. That's very promising because over the years, it's been difficult for us to name the real challenge. So that's very hopeful. What's very hopeful is that there's a sense of partnershiping, not just with the Office of Human Rights and the Human Rights Commission, Human Relations, but also with other partners in the community, and that's very hopeful. We've already helped facilitate two hearings in the community, and it was incredible what we heard from those two hearings, and I'm sure the other hearings that the chief mentioned also were as informative. One of the things we heard was the community wants to be heard. There's a lot of pain out there. There's a lot of experiences, and they want to be heard. Not only that, they want a say into how this plan develops. And I think some of the recommendations that came from those two hearings we anticipate will be responded to by the chief and by the Bureau. Let me share just a little bit about the Community and Police Relations Committee of the Human Rights Commission. Over the past, there have been many, many efforts to engage with the issue of police and community. We want to honor those efforts by continuing the work that has been done, learning from them, and hopefully coming up with ways that will continue to enhance that dialogue. There continues to be great distrust, fear, and cynicism amongst many of our communities, as well as within the Police Bureau. The Human Rights Commission, through its Community and Police Relations Committee, has determined that it will respond to the challenge through a process of truth-telling, of honesty and reconciliation within a context of mutual respect, dignity for all of the people engaged in this dialogue. The key is being responsive to the many and diverse voices in the community. Let me share with you the mission of our committee: to bring together members of Portland's diverse communities and its police officers to improve community and police relations, to further an authentic community policing culture, and to promote dignity, understanding, and respect in police and community interactions. We have sat as a full committee only twice. It took us around 6 months to bring the full complement to the committee. It includes 4 members of the Human Rights Commission, 4 members from the community, and 5 members from the Police Bureau. The process through which we chose those was that we took nominations from throughout the community, either from community groups or from individuals. The Police Bureau recommended their nominees, and a committee of the Community and Police Relations Committee reviewed and interviewed all of those candidates and selected the four and then the five members that fully implemented our committee of 13. So we're now sitting as a full committee able to address some of these issues that we're talking about. Over the first 4 months in which we were not meeting as a full committee, we chose not to take direct action in terms of developing policies and programs. We thought it was important to gather the full committee before we engage in that process. Our initial activities are developing policy and program recommendations for improving community and police relations, to further a culture of community policing, and to assist the Portland Bureau to implement the plan to address racial profiling. In essence, we are a mini-reconciliation community. We hope to address the issues that have confronted the community throughout the years in a way that not only allows the full participation of people to be heard, but also to include them in the process of planning and program development. We thank you for providing the opportunity to the Human Relations Committee. Our commissioner liaison is Commissioner Fritz. We're very hopeful of developing a context in which we will truly bring reconciliation and peace to Portland.
Thank you. This is really, this is our invited panel. I know there are people who wish to testify, but
I would just say no questions, but I want to acknowledge a couple of things to Chief Sizer. I cannot imagine any prior police chief or an existing police chief in any major city in the United States being as open and as candid as you were here today. Not only I was struck with the beautiful simplicity of we hire from the American public, and the American public is not free from racial bias, followed by your own personal interaction. And I want to acknowledge that that goes a long ways in healing in personal situations or public policy to actually acknowledge on a very personal level that a problem exists. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, anything? So I too want to thank you for your leadership in this area and acknowledge the strong support from the police commissioner, Dan Saltzman, and also the excellent work by the commissioner in charge of the Human Relations Commission, Amanda Fritz. I think there is no more important work for us as a city to do than to deal with issues of stereotyping, bias, racism, whether conscious or unconscious, whether we're aware of it on a daily basis or not. And I too, really appreciate your willingness to share an everyday action that we are all guilty of in one way or another. I think that's really important. As the former chief of staff to a former police commissioner, I've had a long experience with this issue, as you know, and you and I had an opportunity to meet privately on this issue in follow-up to my meeting with Oregon Action to talk about a few things. And so I just want to air out some of my hopes moving forward and make sure that as part of the legislative record, there are 22 action items in this plan, and they seem very sound in many ways. A discussion point that you and I had was to develop some actual measures. And obviously, completing the 22 action items will be a measure of progress, a major measure of effort. But we also talked about the notion of, you know, getting the workforce data out there and setting some targets and goals for when we talk about a bureau being reflective of the community in which it serves. What do we mean by that exactly? And it's not an easy answer because you have patrol officers, you have administration, you have detectives. I mean, you have all kinds of different positions. And so it's just like it is for any bureau, it's a difficult, complicated issue, but I think getting those numbers out there will help ensure accountability. in all the investments and the resources and the effort that we're putting into skill development, which I think is great. The notion of being able to, you know, determine whether it's working. I'd like to, whether it's, you know, in our bureaus we have a certain amount, probably not enough around skills testing. I'm not suggesting anything in particular, but as we, it allows us to monitor, you know, whether what we think is going to work is indeed working. And so I'd like to hear about that. I think the outreach that you've outlined is really key and important, and, you know, the debriefs, allowing people to debrief anonymously and therefore more honestly for the officers, for everyone involved, I think is going to be really key, again, to establishing this sort of culture, reinforcing the culture of continuous improvement. And then I really like your partnership with PSU. And as you and I talked about privately, the notion that moving the needle and seeing success on issues of bias and race in a big organization like the city and the police bureau is very difficult to see immediate success. And the first time or if we ever have a racially tinged incident between the police and the community, then all the numbers change almost immediately. But really asking PSU to come up with something to help us do that, I support. So when do you think we can come up with those kinds of dashboard sort of measures and what our goals are? I'd like to hear it, air out that conversation a little bit.
Okay, can I respond? I hate to let the opportunity to talk about the budget a little bit get by, because as you may know, it's, you rightly know, everything costs money. And in a time of budget cutting, oftentimes the things that get cut are your ability to measure and analyze, because we're trying to preserve frontline services. We are fortunate in finally having developed an Office of Professional Accountability and Professional Services that is operating at a really, I think, high level and is doing really good work. So preserving our ability to use that to really work on measurements is important. And then doing something beyond that in terms of community surveys or is going to cost some money. And we will first look within our budget for that money, but it may require more money than we have at the time. My hope is that when we come back to give an update, a systematic update on our progress on the various strategies, we will be in a position to more finely determine adequate measurements for at least some, if not most, of these strategies. That's my hope.
When's that?
Well, I plan personally to update this plan on an annual basis. So part of the update will be, is there a new direction we want to take? Are there new strategies? And then also take an inventory on where we are on the strategies that were adopted in this first plan. And so we published in February, at least in a draft form. So I think next winter to early spring will be the first opportunity to update.
Well,
I think that's realistic given the workload.
But you can get workforce data quicker than that.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure.
So if you could maybe work with your commissioner in charge to sort of give us a work plan of when the individual elements will be coming back. Some, I think, maybe the whole package won't be done until next year, but I think pieces will probably be done sooner than that. That would be useful for, I think, the public. And the other thing, just because it's top of mind, we're all on council working to come up with a sidewalk management plan that's constitutional and effective. And so top of mind, I'd like for you and your commissioner to look at how much of what's in here should be, I'd like you to come back to me with your advice, how much in here should apply to the armed private security that we give the right to patrol or enforce in the right-of-way? How much of this training, how much of the data collection and everything else should, again, your advice, the Bureau's advice, on how much of it should apply to the armed private security that are in the right-of-way?
So I'm presuming through the next RFP process is what you're looking at?
I just want your advice.
Okay.
Yeah. And thank you for your work. It's hard work. You've been doing this a long time, and we really appreciate it. Thanks.
Testimony.
Do we have people signed up to testify?
We have 17 people.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Kevin Foster, Ron Bead, and Maria Jackson. They'll be followed by Jared Eccles, Veronica Clark, and Greg Benton.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. All you need to do is give us your first and last name, no address. And you'll each have 3 minutes, and on that big hunk of wood in front of you is the countdown clock from 3 minutes. So who would like to begin?
I'll go ahead and begin.
Okay. And you might want to move that microphone closer to you. There you go. Thanks.
My name is Maria Diaz. I'm here because I'm here to been fighting against racial profiling with Oregon Action, and I am a leader spokesperson. And I have been a member since of February of 2009. It's been really a pleasure for me to meet with various of my leaders, and like Mayor Stan Adams, Dan Saltzman, Amanda Fritz, Rosie Sizer, Chief of Police, Hector Lopez, the Commissioner of Human Rights, and various other leaders. And now the City Council. At these meetings, I have witnessed not only African Americans in an uproar against racial profiling, which is called bias-based policing, and it's just truly racial profiling. What Oregon Action is asking is for you to help us today to make a more sustainable community and move this plan forward. I know that you will be our allies in this, and we know that you can help us make our community more sustainable for our families and our children and ourselves. These tough decisions are especially important issues like racial profiling. This has caused me to be very proactive with Oregon Action in my community to set up meetings to help get more people involved in to ensure a greater sustainable community for our families and us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Foster. I'm the chairman of Oregon Action Racial Profiling Committee. And I just wanted to, first of all, commend Chief Sizer for coming up with a plan. It does show her commitment to fighting the issue. I know I've been with Oregon Action for probably about a year and a half, but I know they've been in Oregon, in Portland, fighting several injustices for several years. One of the things I want to make sure that the plan encompasses is that there is officer accountability. So if they do see a problem with an officer, there's some way that they can show the community that they are addressing that. And another thing we want is we would like the plan to make sure that the Portland City Council, that you, the council members, are overseeing the police bureau. I want to thank you for your time today and your attention to this matter.
Thank you, sir, very much. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Ron Bead. I'd first of all like to commend the chief myself on the plan. It does show that we, the city is taking, the police department is taking an effort, making a specific effort to address this problem. I'd also like to say that we think that the city council should take authority over this issue, and we'd like to see, you know, some direct, how can I say, authority being taken in some way whatsoever. I can't say enough about the issue of officer accountability. As Kevin mentioned, it's very important that we have given suggestions to you, City Council, on previous meetings, of ways to do this without making the officer specific officer obvious to the community. I mean, their persons obvious available there to the community. We'd like to see in-dash cameras and our recording devices in the cars. And we feel that the issuance of the business card is a good idea. However, I don't know if they're authorized to give the youth a card when they're stopped also. I think that would also be a good idea. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you all very much for your testimony and your advocacy on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte.
Next three are Jared Ickles, Veronica Clark, and Greg Benton. They'll be followed by Gary Cobb, Eric Glass, and Robert Marino.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Ickles.
Good morning. Okay, my name is Gerard Ickles. I'm the co-chair of the Racial Profiling Committee of Oregon Action. Being a young black African-American male here in Portland, Oregon, I've witnessed firsthand some of the, you know, some of the acts of the Portland police, the profiling, I should say. For a good portion of my life, and I just want to say I'm really glad that this issue is being brought to light and we're going to get somewhere, you know. That's all I really want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ickles. Appreciate it. Mr. Benton.
All right. My name is Greg Benton, and I'm a member of Oregon Action. They asked me to speak to you today to talk about racial profiling, and the report given by the chief of police to me seemed a bit incomplete, and here's why. One of the things in racial profiling we've discovered in the city of Portland is the pretense unwarranted search and seizure. What I mean by pretense is, for instance, in my case, an anonymous phone call was made to the police regarding a person being shot in the building. The police, based upon only that call and that call alone, decided to enter a secure building, kick in every door that didn't answer, force everybody at gunpoint who did answer to submit to a search. When they came to my apartment, I simply asked for, they said, police, welfare check. I looked at my peephole. There's nobody there. It's 2:30 a.m. in the morning. Well, you know, in the past, people have been robbed and all kinds of things from people pretending to be the police. Calling the police to find out who that was at my door, found out it was the police. Didn't make any difference to them. Said, we have to check. We have a right to check, and we don't care. I said, do you have a warrant? They said, no, but you're just making it difficult for yourself. To make a long story short, it took a while for us to get an entry. As I attempted to open the door, I was almost shot by the police. There was nobody shot in my building. There was nobody injured in my building. The person who made the phone call, the police did interview, but they didn't find anything. They didn't arrest them. They didn't do anything like that. What my point is this, is that we're treated differently, not only because of race, because of race and class. And that to make it short, even though this all took place, police believe, city attorney believe that this was improper, I had to actually file a civil suit in the federal court in order to bring it to light. It should be a simpler process for this. The system that you set up doesn't work. We're still in federal court with the city of Portland. The city refuses to settle. They offered a settlement less than what the actual attorney fees would be. If you cannot make this process seamless, all of this seems for naught. It sounds good what you're presenting, but in reality, it doesn't work. We need a more effective way of dealing with these kinds of issues.
And when did that incident happen?
2006.
Thank you,
October.
Sir.
October.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Clark.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Veronica Clark. I have lived in Portland, in the Portland area, since 1982. With travels in the early 90s, I was a Desert Storm mother, wife. I'm a mother of four biracial sons, 18, 16, 14, and 2. I've been a progressive in these equality issues forever. My work with Oregon Action began in 2004 after my family pet was shot by Portland police on my resident property with my dad standing 10 feet away. I was never given a reason why. She was not a violent animal. She was on her leash. This was after being stopped an average of 12 times a year between 2001 and 2004 after the separation of my marriage. After this incident, officers did reach out to my family and were remorseful. They stopped by my house. It was very painful and devastating to my family. I sold my home and moved out of the area. Even though this was devastating, I did not want my sons to villainize the police, so I involved them in the Palace football program through Madison immediately after. I was later stopped by the officer who shot my pet, and I had an opportunity to express to him my forgiveness. I'm a citizen in a culture of color. I want to help make a positive change. And I believe that's what we're doing here. And I want to show my gratitude towards the chief for being so brave. You know, we have a couple hundred years of historical discrimination. And I want to applaud all of you for your bravery, Mayor, dealing with this. And I know a lot of people in here appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Thank you all for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Okay. Probably the next three
are Gary Cobb, Eric Glass, and Robert Marino. And they'll be followed by James Wilson, David Hardity. Oh, okay. What is it? James Wilson. See, please come on up then. Sorry. And they'll be followed by David Hardity, Joanne Bowman, and Cliff Walker.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Cog. Who's Mr. Cog?
He's not Cog.
Oh, Mr. Glass.
That's me.
All right.
Hello. I'm glad to be here today, and I just want to thank you guys for having us. As you know, I'm from Oregon Action. I have had a meeting priorly with Saltzman, you, Mr. Adams, on racial profiling. I'm also a part of a nonprofit that I am the founder of, me and James Wilson, to keep kids out of gang violence. I have been stopped numerous of times. Friends have been stopped. I'm from a generation of people that have been racial profiled for the last probably 20 years. I mean, when I went and looked at my OGIN files, I'm seeing how many times I've been stopped. And it came to about 30 or 40 times. I just wanted to see this stop. I want to see these plans be implemented, and would love to see more officer accountability when these type of things happen to us. Basically, that's all I have to say today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Mr. Marino?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your time. My name is Robert Marino, and I'm on the Oregon Action Racial Profiling Committee. I live in Portland, and I drive a TriMet Lyft bus. We as a committee have several points that we would like to bring to your attention. The first is that we would like to see the council have authority over the issue of racial profiling and have everything be ultimately going through the city council. We want the implementation of the plan to be at the highest levels of the police department, and again with the city, so from Chief Sizer then to the commissioners. We also would like the police to report to the city council on the progress of implementing a racial profiling plan at least every 90 days. We think there are some things that could be done to strengthen the plan. We would like more clarity around hiring of minorities. What is the exact percentage? Is it 10%? And what is that percentage of the general population? How does that work? We'd like more clarity there. We would also like to see more individual officer accountability in racial profiling. I'm wondering if the council has investigated dash cameras and sound recording devices for patrol cars and if not, would request that you do that. We do like automatic business card issuance. And lastly, we are concerned about the police contributing $250,000 a year to the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. We believe that that gives them undue control.